Will economic pressure determine the fate of Libya?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning. From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. We are 6 weeks into the fighting in Libya, and President Obama has just co-authored an op-ed standing firm on the mission to oust Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi. But even U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates has said it's going to be political and economic pressure that eventually leads to Gaddafi's ouster. For more on the economic side of things, we're going to talk now with the former British ambassador to Libya, Sir Richard Dalton. Good morning.
Good morning.
What are the economic pressures at this point, and how serious are they for Gaddafi?
Inability to sell their oil, collapse of the labor market. There is money in Tripoli, but they are going increasingly, as the months go by, to live from hand to mouth.
Is there economic pressure on the rebels as well? In other words, is there a chance that countries around the world are going to get impatient with this sort of stalemate that's going on and go back to doing deals with Gaddafi?
I don't think that's likely for the next few months. There would be a serious international backlash. The East is gradually resuming economic activity.
I saw that the group of five nations called the BRICS, the Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, these emerging economies, just said that the use of force should be avoided in Libya. What's that all about?
Well, that's about marking a separate position from the coalition, but without going so far as to antagonize the powerful countries represented at the United Nations and in the coalition.
But why do they want to have a separate position?
They want to play it both ways. So whether Gaddafi stays or there is a victory for democratic forces, they want to be able to say that they had a part in it. So they don't want to commit themselves too strongly to any one course of action at present.
They want to be able to do deals with whoever ends up being in power in Libya.
Yes, I mean, that's true for everybody because Libyan oil is important in the long run. And Libya, as a prosperous country in North Africa, although a country only with a population only of about 7 million, is a significant medium-scale trade partner for many countries on both sides of the Atlantic.
Sir Richard Dalton, former British ambassador to Libya, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
To Silicon Valley now. Google says its earnings were up more than 25% in the first 3 months of this year, but investors seem more interested in the spending spree Google is on right now. Under the direction of its new CEO, Larry Page, Google is investing more in new technologies, businesses, and hirings. And as Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports, all that spending is making some people nervous about Google's bottom line.
One of the places Google's spending all that money is on people. The company's planning to hire more than 6,000 people this year. And at the beginning of the year, people who were already working there got 10% raises. Google's searching for new sources of revenue beyond its basic search business, and it's trying to compete with Facebook and other social networking sites. Henry Blodgett is editor at Business Insider. He says there's a tension between Google and investors because Wall Street is so impatient.
What Google is doing with investing is basically saying we're investing for the long haul. And Wall Street appreciates that theoretically, but they want the money right now.
He says Google's doing what it should be, trying to expand. And it may be growing up as a company. Its earnings are healthy. They're just not as stratospheric as they were for a while. This is also the first earnings report since Google's co-founder Larry Page took over as CEO. And investors are nervous he may be more of an engineer than a businessman. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Well, in addition to Google, Bank of America earnings are out this morning. Its results are lower because of continuing problems in its mortgage division. And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed across the globe this morning after news of more inflation in China. Beijing said consumer prices jumped another 5% over a year ago. Policymakers in China have already boosted interest rates four times in the last 6 months to cool inflation. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow added 14 points to close at 12,285.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constant Contact Event Marketing, working to help small businesses and nonprofits make their events easier with event registration and marketing tools. ConstantContact.com. By CSX, transporting 2 billion pounds of goods to market by train and working to help move the economy forward. CSX, how tomorrow moves. and by Reputation.com, helping small business owners, professionals, and executives monitor, protect, and improve their online reputations. Reputation.com.
A delegation of California lawmakers is in Texas today looking into why California has shed jobs over the last 3 years while Texas has created them. From Austin, Ben Philpott reports.
It's a challenge Texas Governor Rick Perry often makes. Leave what he calls high-tax California and come to low-tax Texas. So California Assemblyman Dan Logue brought a bipartisan group of lawmakers to ask some recent defectors why they made the move and what would bring them back.
We're here to talk about primarily jobs. If you don't grow the economy, everything else doesn't matter.
But are taxes really lower in Texas than the Golden State? A report by the Council on State Taxation, a D.C.-based tax research group, showed Texas businesses actually have a higher tax burden. But the report takes into account California's artificially suppressed property taxes, thanks to the 1970s ballot initiative, Prop 13. Doug Lindholm heads up the group.
So if you look at private sector product, the burden in Texas is higher, but that's, again, attributable to the fact that California has a lower property tax rate on both businesses and individuals, unless, of course, you sell that property.
Once you sell a property, it no longer falls under Prop 13's tax protection. So Lindholm says leaving California probably wouldn't help established businesses. But in most cases, startups would be better off in the Lone Star State than in California. In Austin, I'm Ben Philpott for Marketplace.
And finally, turns out the debit card idea has been around a lot longer than we thought. Archaeologists in Germany have discovered a 453-year-old wooden tally stick. It's got little nicks on it that were used to keep track of debts. No word on what the interchange fees the cobblers and weavers charge customers to use the debit stick were. I don't even want to know about the out-of-kingdom ATM fees. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. On Twitter, at Jeremy Hobson, this is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media. Earthquake, tsunami, economy.
Even before the earthquake, prices were falling because of the competition from China. Now we're even less sure about what will happen to our company.
I'm Kai Rizdal, because Japan just doesn't have enough to worry about. That's next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.